Welcome to the world of Muscle Smoke and Mirrors, where it's all about muscle, health, history, training, nutrition, bodybuilding, and state of mind.
Hey, listener. We're back with another episode of The World of Muscle, Smoke and Mirrors. I am one of your hosts, Tomash, and on the other end is Randy.
Good afternoon, Tomash.
Good afternoon to you too, Randy. I just got wind that you were asked, well, you're in the April issue of 2015th Maxim magazine, and I didn't even know about this until the article came out. And I started talking to you about it, and I figured we might as well make an episode on how come they even asked you about SARMs.
Well, not because I'm an expert on this topic. Jake Rawson's, I believe he's a freelance writer, and he was doing this article for Maxim magazine on a new drug compound. And I believe he must have read my books and known that I was writing on the history of steroids and other drugs in the sport. So I had heard of SARMs, but I didn't know much about them. It stands for Selective Androgen Receptor Modulators. Okay, so this is a compound.
What does that mean in English?
Well, for those in bodybuilding, you can just like selective androgen receptor modulators, like muscle receptors. Okay, protein synthesis, steroids. All
so
those.
That's what it plays.
It's not
with?
A steroid. Okay, it's not being prescribed by any physicians right now. It's in its research stages. They're classified actually as research chemicals. And I think that categorization opens some loopholes that a lot of people can just get a hold of it and say we're doing research on animals. This to be done on animals. But of course, bodybuilders looked at the term animal as a compliment. And they think, well, that's us, right? Yeah. So some muscle builders are experimenting with it. And they're saying this builds muscle. It actually has a connection with the androgen receptors in taking up protein synthesis without affecting testosterone. See, to the problem with testosterone, it'll come in, it will definitely affect those same androgen receptors of increased protein synthesis, but it can also affect other receptors throughout the body, like the prostate and stuff, and things you don't want that way. But with these SARMs, there are still very notable side effects. And basically, these guys who are getting these chemical compounds are making themselves guinea pigs, in which the bodybuilders have always basically done that.
Are the side effects in animals, or have they already happened in humans?
No, they're happening in the humans. They're actually like they're also going to be driving the car. I think the one guy's eyesight just went yellow.
Oh, wow.
So there's a very notable side effect, and there's some other thing. The article's out, and it's in there for people to read. It's interesting because it's another one of those sports enhancing compounds that it's beyond testosterone. But he wanted to check with me because I noted, well, there's more stuff coming in probably book four of Muscle, Smoke, and Mirrors, volume 3, about drugs from the 80s and 90s. And it really was in the 1990s that the bodybuilders started to really pick up beyond stacking these anabolic steroids. You know, we got into growth hormone, insulin-like growth factors, you know, insulin, which is extremely dangerous.
That was the early 80s, right? Or late 70s they did the insulin thing?
Well, I think they started talking about it when Tim Belknap, I believe he was the 1981 Mr. America, and he was diabetic.
Yeah.
And people were starting to wondering about insulin at that time. It's interesting.
Well, he changed. He transformed his body from 1 year to the next, like dramatically.
He looked like a little rhinoceros.
Yeah, he compete as a middleweight at one point, and then the next year he was like massive.
I don't know. I can't remember, but I remember him coming out at the time. I just can't remember his history offhand. But it was at a time, 1979, 1981, when the athletes were also starting to experiment with growth hormone. But they were getting it from the cadavers of HGH, from cadavers, dead bodies. But it's interesting because at this time, around this time, it just by coincidence, it was kind of like this breakout of a Creutzfeldt-Jakob disease, which is affiliated with taking HGH from cadavers. It's a degenerative neurological disease. And whether the timing was right on, but around 1979, they were announcing this new recombinant DNA, and they were producing recombinant DNA is basically taking DNA fragments from different sources and combining them. And they were using bacterium to produce growth hormone. They were using it to produce insulin and produce amino acids. This just reminds me of a funny story that Ken Leisner told me about Joe Weider. It was at around that time that Joe was really pushing and selling the crystalline amino acids. Mm-hmm. And Joe, with all his technical terminology, said to Ken, he was trying to explain about the bacteria, and he said, Ken, these things literally shit amino acids, right? So that was Joe's understanding of the technicalities of how this recombinant DNA was being used to produce these, growth hormone. They would take the DNA gene fragment of human HGH and combine it with bacteria, and the bacteria would produce the growth hormone. I think the product later became somatotropin, and I think it was roughly released in 1985. So the body, it was very expensive, but the bodybuilders were experimenting with HGH from cadavers in the early 80s. Then later on, they were starting to use the recombinant DNA growth hormone into the 90s. And the insulin, though, the insulin really became more popular in the 90s too, but it was dangerous because with steroids, there's always controversy over long-term use. But with insulin, death could be imminent if mm-hmm. not mitigated properly, because too much insulin can drive your glucose through the floor and create a hypoglycemic coma, or what's known as insulin shock, right? So these guys had to be very careful, and there were some very close calls because insulin is anabolic. It affects the receptors of the muscles to take up carbohydrate, and it also has other systemic effects, signaling for amino acid uptake as well. So it's an anabolic hormone in that sense.
Anything to build and make bigger muscles.
Yeah, and that's when the bodybuilders started combining. They were already stocking, injectables and oral steroids, and taking metabolic enhancers like thyroid, Prolyd, and I forget the pig version of it, but to increase body fat reduction. But when they started combining insulin, like growth factor, IGF, and growth hormone and insulin, the body's morphed with the extended stomachs and how it was partitioning body fat and muscle, whether the organs themselves were growing, but the waistline just kind of ballooned right out.
Yeah, so unless they had extreme control over those muscles, they couldn't, some of them couldn't even control the size of the stomachs.
We talked about that in, I think, our second podcast.
Yeah, about judging.
Yeah, they couldn't do any vacuum at all, right?
Yeah.
And again, SARMs is the latest, but there's more. Myostatin inhibitors. Myostatin is produced in the body
That was early 2000s. That's when those became popular, and images of animals that had that inhibitor removed.
Yes, it blocked myostatin. So myostatin would stop the body from producing too much muscle. It was like a genetic set point. Okay, here's how much muscle you can have. The myostatin would stop from going overboard. So, let's block that. Right? Let's stop that nasty myostatin, get it out of here, and see how much muscle. But everything would grow again. All muscles would grow, right? Right. Mm-hmm. And the jowls, everything, the obliques, stuff that you might not necessarily want to grow. And again, there's going to be more in terms of genetic modification. There's many things that the bodybuilders will, engage if it means building muscle. And I think,
so Jake, this is the latest.
SARMs as being one of the latest, right?
Mm-hmm. So. And you mentioned about insulin, there were close calls. Imagine, these are the ones we know of. Imagine the unknowns who've experimented with it, and we would never know about them.
And it's there's dangers to this, because I remember back in the late 70s and early 80s, when we were just talking about when insulin was coming to be used, I went through a barrage of 12 to 15 eye surgeries down in Toronto. I was always surrounded on the eye floor by diabetics. And they weren't just there for their eyes. Like they were, sometimes they were coming from different floors. Sometimes they were coming in specific for the eyes, but they had gum degeneration, kidney failures. They had amputations, blood vessels. You know, I was seeing it with their detached retinas and blood clottings in the retinas. And I thought, oh, well, that diabetes is like a really nasty disease. But I found out that they were saying, no, this is a problem with insulin, using insulin. And I'm thinking, you know, okay, insulin is an endocrine hormone, like testosterone. It's different, but it's an endocrine hormone. If they're having this much problem with insulin when they're actually trying to control the drug, the hormone, it's not a far cry to think that with the bodybuilders absolutely abusing testosterone, going way over what would be normal, that there's going to be some problems, right? Mm-hmm. So from that point on, when I've always studied nutrition, I would always tell diabetics, look at whatever you do with your diet, you really have to consider a higher fat diet and a moderate to low protein and carbohydrate, because the less amount of insulin you use, the better, because it's horrible. It's almost like your body just starts to rot. It's not a nice word to use, but the way they just everything degenerates and stuff like that. So I really became aware of like especially diabetes and insulin, just watching this diabetic suffer. When I was having specific eye surgery on my cornea, they were having other procedures done. But I say like this, when these guys stacking all these steroids, I'm not talking about HRT hormone replacement therapy. You can argue that has its place for people who don't have proper amount of testosterone. But we're talking about taking, look at Don Holworth when he came back. He took 10 milligrams of Dianabol in 1967, and I believe him. His diet was, I believe, very conducive to making that 10 milligrams come alive and be very anabolic. But when he came back 10 years later, you know, this is a time when Pete Gromkowski was taking 10 grams. Don couldn't even accept taking 100 milligrams, let alone,
10 grams of 10,000 milligrams.
Yeah.
Times more.
Yeah, yeah. It's to think that won't have any detrimental effects, you know.
Well, yeah, and the crazy thing about it is I don't know what people are taking today, but usually more the better, right? That's the mentality.
For a billion. Well, Pete said he did demonstrate that the more he took, the bigger he got. Yeah. But others have said, I've talked to a number of prominent bodybuilders, I won't say any names now, they say that when they got bigger, they didn't necessarily have to take more drugs. They were taking enough, but they had increased their food. Mm-hmm. And I'm a believer of that. And like we're talking about, if, you know, it's anybody's business. Who, if they want to take steroids, that's their business, right?
Yes.
But my problem is, if you take steroids, fine. Compete in steroids.
Shows that are also like even competitors take drugs.
Don't say you're not taking them and compete in a natural show, right? That's the part that everybody gets pissed off about. So, but you know,
because even Tom Platz, I think, mentioned that there's a different quality of muscle. Like you can tell the muscle looks different on someone who takes steroids and on those that don't.
Yeah, when he was coming up, he noticed that, okay, this guy has a totally different look than I got, right? This is back in the mid-70s when Tom was finding out for himself what was making the top pros tick. But there's a lot of pros.
Sorry, that brings a question in my head. What about those who have taken steroids but have come off?
Well, you and I have talked about this many times, and we're not dogmatic about this, but is it that once you take steroids and then you come off, that you have enhanced your physique in a way that could not be matched had you never taken them? Are there certain specific muscle-building matrices blowing out? You know, there's an increase in mitochondria. We talked about the para-endo and epimyosin sheaths around the muscles that get stretched and blown out. So is it possible for you to go on a cycle of steroids once and put on that 30 pounds and, you know, look after yourself, come off and have, eventually be 5%, 3%, 5%, 10% bigger than had you never taken them before?
Yeah, because muscle memory kicks in too, right? I mean, once you've gotten to a certain point, it's much easier to reach that point if you ever lose it.
I've asked opinions in the industry from those, who are, pretty knowledgeable in this area. I really don't think there's any pure experts in this area because it's so biochemically individual and stuff like that. But some think they believe that. Some don't. Some think that it's the hormone that drives the muscle increase. But now we're looking at this SARMs that doesn't affect testosterone, and it increases muscle synthesis. And they say the results stay when you stop. So this opens that door again. Okay, what exactly is responsible for muscle growth and to keep it where maybe it's not all just to do with the testosterone and whether the levels are up or down. I don't know. Like I said, I'm not dogmatic about this. I wouldn't bet the farm on this. But if anybody out there who has an opinion on this, if you think that once you've enhanced that muscle growth, whether it's through steroids or any other compound, then you come off, are you at a permanent advantage from that point on, more so than if you had not taken them at all, anything before?
Absolutely. I'd be curious if anyone even has experience with it.
Yeah, I'm sure there's going to be yays and nays, right? Mm-hmm. I have. Like I said, we're not trying to say this is the way it is. I just tend to think that that's a possibility.
Yes.
Especially if it was done properly. But, we'll see. We'll see.
Wasn't that the premise? I think you and I talked about that you had thought about it at one point. If you didn't have any of these issues, health issues, that you would have been open to experimenting once and see what it could do.
Had I been, I was actually very anti-steroid in my younger days. Had I been prominently working out in the 60s when these other guys were, and I had no problems, say with Stevens-Johnson syndrome, I can't say I wouldn't have taken them. I probably would have tried them because it wasn't against the law. And the guys, even like Boris said, there's guys in college who had nothing to do with bodybuilding were trying them because it was just, hey, this thing builds muscle. Right?
Yeah, it's kind of like try the latest supplement. And that's kind of what it was at that time. It wasn't illegal.
But I was pretty anally against them in, say, the 80s and 90s. I just loosened up later in my years. It doesn't bother people take them. Like I said, I've drank enough alcohol in my day to just don't hit my liver. So why should I throw stones at somebody who just took steroids, right?
Yeah. It is their choice.
I remember one of my treks in the hospital there, they said they're going to put me on steroids. And I'm thinking, okay, I think this is late, very, very, very late 1970s. I'm thinking, I said to the doctor, I said, so you're going to give me steroids? Because they couldn't stop these blood vessels coming all over my cornea, right? Mm-hmm. And they didn't know what to do. And they were thinking of using us. And I said, like the athletes take. He goes, oh, no. He goes, this would be the different opposite, like catabolic steroids to stop the growth of it, right? I'm thinking, well, you're going to inject me with this? I said, no. So they said, okay, well, we're just going to, they come up with a better idea. Well, this is directly inject it right into your eyeball.
Better idea.
Yeah, well, that's not a great idea either, but that's what they did. But they never did give me the steroids to do that, thank God.
But, oh, wow. Okay.
All right.
So how did how much have you contributed to that article in Maxim?
I'm just quoted in about the athletes taking insulin and such in the 1990s with the risk of taking a compound that could kill you immediately, like fast, not like a steroid that may or may not do anything. We don't know, but we know insulin will kill you. Like it's called a hypoglycemic coma, insulin shock, right? It happens accidentally by diabetics, right?
Yes.
I know Wayne D'Amelio had to deal with an issue with an athlete. He took this time released, and then they had to keep feeding him all night long, feeding him sugar, sugar, sugar. Now the next day, it drove all that sugar in his muscles. See, the guy's never looked that good in his life. But, but I mean, he could have gone into a coma had they not kept him up and going, right?
True. Okay. What's the takeaway then? Wait until someone else experiments with all this.
Let somebody else try it. Let's get Mikey to try it. And then we'll see how it goes from there.
If he survives, then sure.
It's just to tell the listener what's going on out there. And
yeah, this is the latest and greatest, I guess, coming out.
Yeah. That's all. That's good.
Okay. Thanks for that.
We'll see you next
episode.
Oh, before we go, we'd love to hear from you. Get in touch with us by leaving a comment on our website, theworldofmuscle.com. And also, if you like this podcast, please share it with a friend and be sure to give it a 5-star review on iTunes. Thanks for listening.
Thank you for listening to The World of Muscle, Smoke, and Mirrors. We hope you've enjoyed the content of this episode, and we're looking forward to sharing more next time.